Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This talking time, we're going to be talking about employer relationship, right? Yeah. We talk about the employer at this show. Employer is used as a generic term. It does not necessarily indicate an actual legal employment relationship. It's just a generic term for whoever it was that was smart enough to bring us in. Yeah, it's a generic term for whoever said, well, I think that Sue should be the leader and could figure out what to do about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so whoever is, maybe they're not even the boss. Maybe we're the boss, but they think they're the boss, right? Right. So the employer is a generic term for whoever it is that brought us in. Might not be a person, might be a board, might be an organization, whatever. But that's, we're going to call everybody the employer and not worry about what the actual relationship is. Whoever it is that we have to deal with and kind of report to, whoever sees the final results and needs them to be successful, right? That's an employer. So what type of relationship do we need with this now defined employer? What type? Yes, thank you. A lot of folks, and thank you all for being here and for your participation, a lot of folks are saying a civil one because the civility rules are pretty much the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now has. So yes, we need the civility rules to be enforced all the way around in all directions. And yes, the other thing we need the employer to do and has to be a part of our relationship, I want to call it to be backed by the employer. We need the employer to really help us if things get, well, if things need help, right? Yeah. How about with the power to enforce those civility rules? So it's not just words. There's actually some teeth behind it. Sometimes you don't need this. In fact, 90% of the time. The civility rules, everybody understands them. They adhere to them because they want to be treated with respect, just as somebody else wants to be treated with respect. It goes all in both directions, right? So people understand that. But there's that 10% of the time where you've got someone who's truly a bully, truly wants to be a disruptor, right? And that 10% of the time, we're going to need the employer to help us enforce the civility rules, right? Right. Need to be backed up by the employer. How about with funding also? Lots of folks are talking about expenses and how to determine what your funding's supposed to be. Sometimes it is set, the determination of how much, because a lot of people are talking about how much should I ask for. Let's do that now. We'll get to the meat of this. It'll be fine. The answer is sometimes the amount is set, as in the employer offers you a certain amount of funding. If you truly think that's inadequate, the amount is inadequate, you should say so, because they're going to take your silence as acquiescence. And you agreed to this much. If you know in your heart that that is not going to do it by a mile, I mean really, really not going to do it, you need to get them to a more realistic level. And if they will not rise to a more realistic level, you might need to end the relationship. You know, sometimes relationships end too. And I like to get things straightened out ahead of time so that they don't end in mid-process. Sometimes I reach a situation where I go in and we talk about it, and they, offer a small amount of money that I know is not going to work out, and they don't want to be really a part of the process. And I explain that I'm not the right leader for this, that this is not the way I can work. Right? Yeah. And they accept that. Well, they either have to accept it or they have to modify their expectations. But sometimes, yeah, this is really true too. People are saying that that's a first volley, a first level negotiation to lowball it and then work your way up. Yes, sometimes it is. Now, I have repeat clients, and we don't even have to bother doing that dance. But sometimes it is you're in negotiation, really. It doesn't seem like you are. But when you say, no, I can't work under those circumstances, they'll up them, right? It was just a hope. It was a low ball, a low offer. So, yeah, and then you can decide if you want to work with someone that obnoxious. Oops, did I say that? But sometimes you are not extremely experienced in your field and you want to gain some reputation. So you'll take an employer who is, likes to play games like that. And sometimes you won't. Or sometimes it might be a topic in which you are particularly interested and you really want to help. You want to get it done and not leave it to somebody who's really not going to know what to do with it. So there's no rule about what to accept employer personality-wise, personality being a big term because sometimes the employer is not an individual, but there's no hard and fast rule about it. It has to do with your opinion at that moment and how you feel about it and whether or not you're willing to do a little bit of negotiation and like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. People are saying it depends how busy you are and how many negotiations you've kind of got in play and maybe how much it's paying. That could be a consideration, too, because funding isn't only for the outcome, for the solution. Funding is for you, too. You're getting paid. And, yeah. That's an interesting question. People are asking if I ask for a deposit, like a set amount up front to cover my costs and things like that. Personally, not anymore, because I deal with the same businesses. I do business mediation mainly. I'm not dealing with individuals. I never do family law, which is individuals, right? And I never do criminal, which is also kind of individuals, maybe even less than that, might be a court. But so I don't because I know I'll get paid, because they want to be clients again, that we have an ongoing relationship. If you feel that you should, I don't think that's an unreasonable ask to have some sort of a fee up front, like a minimum fee, right? Yeah, because you are having expenses and you are using your time and expertise. And you don't want to find out at the end that you invoice to no avail, right? Yeah, I've seen that done, and I certainly think that it's a wise business decision. You don't have to do it for all of your clients, right? You do it for the ones that are new, that are iffy, that are more individual than corporate, and like that. So you can make a decision as to whether or not that's going to be something that you're going to require before you start. What else does the employer need to understand about us? Well, they understand that they need to be flexible, which is what a lot of you folks are talking about. Flexible. Being able to say, well, at the beginning, we thought that this was how we were going to define success, for example. But now that we're into it, now that we see the players, now that we see the circumstances, now that we have done some research and brought in some experts, for example, we're going to have to rethink this. We're going to have to be flexible in our understanding. And that's a wonderful thing to get people to understand. To understand that you might, at the beginning, you might not understand. That oftentimes we're going to require some flexibility as we go along. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. What type of relationship? Yes, people are talking about the employer needing to also deal with higher-ups too. And that's what Suki calls saving face. And it's kind of an Americanism, but it means that I am the employer, and I don't want to admit for my superiors, for my peers, really for anybody, that I might have been, wrong, right? I might not have been doing it the right way. And I don't want to admit such a thing. So you have to understand that that's a position of the employer, that they don't want to have any kind of reputation not so good, right? So you have to work it out so that they win, so that they are good at this, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What type of relationship do we need with the employer? You have to think about the employer's relationship with outsiders, which is the saving face, with their superiors, but also with future outsiders. That's the implementation that a lot of you are talking about. Because sometimes, and this is something to determine too, because I won't take these, sometimes an employer isn't serious. They want to appear to be fair-minded and charitable, for example, but they don't actually want to be fair-minded and charitable. They just want people to think they are, right? Don't take those if you could possibly do it. There's no respect there. They're trying to fool you. Well, what kind of relationship is that? We want to just play lip service to it. We're going to have, what they want is they want everybody to agree in principle. Gosh, I hate that little phrase that's usually put into parentheses. In principle, we agree in principle. It means we're not going to do anything, but we agree that it would be better if we didn't kill each other. Ah, gee. Yeah, in principle. No. We want in reality. In fact, in actually doing something, right? Yeah, in principle is not going to cut it, folks. Mm-hmm. Because you need respect in every direction, and you need a solution that we can now implement, that we can now at least start to implement, that we can now make a difference with, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So that's our expectations of the employer. What does the employer expect from us? That's the other side of it, right? We know what we want, but what do they think they want from us, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, the consensus of everybody is the employer usually wants too much. They have overzealous expectations. They think they're going to get too much from this, right? And we need to educate them. We need to understand that they want the sun, the moon, and the stars. Because why not? Everybody wants the sun, the moon, and the stars. But that is not a viable option. We need to educate them as to the highest, the bestest that we can get, at least at this point in the process. Because sometimes it's not that you can't get the sun, the moon, and the stars. Maybe you can, but we're not there yet. We need to have more steps in the process. We need to get further along in our how, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. You need to educate the employer about empathy, right? Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Pardon me. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. We need to understand all sides. We need to understand where they're coming from. We need to understand what it is that they really want and what kind of a compromise they'll accept. Because not everybody's going to get everything. In fact, there's a good chance that no one will get everything that they want. That's why we call it compromise, folks, right? Yeah. We're going to have to negotiate. We're going to have to figure out what it is that we need as opposed to what it is that we would desire. Right? Everything that the sun, the moon, and the stars. Right? Yeah. So let's get some empathy. Let's ask the 5W questions so we can find stuff out. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who told you that? What exactly did they say? Where did you hear it? When was it told to you? And why did you come to this conclusion? Said in an extremely polite, respectful, full sentence way, maybe in front of everybody else, maybe not. You see, those are all judgment calls. But being respectful and not just going, who do you think you are? That's not going to get you anywhere. You need to be respectful and... Yes, thank you. A lot of you are finishing this sentence. And listen, right? Yeah. Not listen with your ears, the ones that know what the response is going to be, but listen as an impartial third party, which is what you're supposed to be as leader, right? You're an impartial third party. Let's listen as though we have never seen this before, as we have never heard the answer before. Let's watch the body language. Let's look at the person. Let's determine how we think they got this information, right? And whether or not it's a bias. Let's determine if we have a bias, right? Yeah, because sometimes we might, which might be coloring our opinion of this entire process. We got to know that. We have to be honest with ourselves, right? We need to think about how was that opinion formed? Was it formed through experience? Or was it formed because somebody taught it to you? See, taught it is kind of serious bias, probably, right? If it started out with the sentence, those kind of people, ooh, that's not a good sentence, right? Yeah. Because it means that we've put no thought into it, and it doesn't accommodate the people sitting in front of you. One of the ways to get over this, and we'll talk about it in more detail a little bit further on in this show, is to not necessarily make everybody friends. It probably can't be done if there are deep enough biases. But to let everybody understand, and this is acceptable because it doesn't violate your premise, right, your comfort zone, that for this issue, at this time, with these people, at this juncture, we're going to work together. And then the biased people can think, well, I still don't like, oh, fill in the blank, because for generations, my people have not liked them. That's always a good sentence, too. For generations, my people have, fill in the blank. It's usually not a good one. But what we're going to have to accept is that the people we're dealing with now, these participants, at this point in time, for these issues, these individuals, they're better than the rest. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they are because we can deal with them. It's not our job. It would be nice if this happened, and sometimes it does. But it's not our job to actually force people to literally be friends and get along with each other. You're going to need to get them to work together. And one of the things, successfully, and for long periods of time maybe, and long after you're not the leader anymore, and it's internalized, right? And one of the ways to do this, and I do not know why this is a surprise at all times, but you may take my word for the fact that it is a surprise, is to tell, usually it's two of them that are bickering in front of their groups because they're showing off, to tell them that you don't have to be friends, but we need to work together. And the faster we work this out, the faster we're done. This seems to be a surprise every time. The faster we work things out, the faster we are done. Hot diggity. Sometimes the expectations are also, employer expectations were still on. Sometimes they're created by outsiders, go to the media, or our friends on the internet who are commenting and like that. So the expectations rise because they go, oh, those people say we can, even though they have no basis. So let's start in on this more thoroughly, although we've already started in fairly thoroughly. Let's talk about the civility rules and a civil relationship with our employer. It's terribly important. If you start out being at odds, if you've got someone who's truly fighting you, well, what good are they? Because they're the leader of the leader, right? Do not take that kind of project on. You don't have to take everything that's offered to you. It will harm your reputation if you fail. Yeah, it will enhance your reputation if you don't. This is true. And I must confess that after I've given you that advice, I take on the most complicated and the most difficult and the already failed because it's kind of my specialty. And they expect me to, and they expect to hear about the new sheriff in town. Pardon me, took a sip of water. And I do require that how the employer is going to back me, what they will do in this scenario or that scenario, I require that be signed in writing and compensated and like that, because sometimes when it comes down to it, they go, yeah, of course. But it's not yeah, of course, when yes, we're not going to use the expression that involves a fan and excrement. Well, the excrement touches the fan. But, sometimes when things go kind of wacky, they don't want to step in. And the answer is I have it in writing that you will. And if you will not, then we can get somebody in who will, and they need to be compensated at some enormous rate. Oh, people asking who to get in. I have kind of a pool of experts, right, to break an impasse, for example. If it truly needs the words, and if you don't cooperate, you're fired, if those words need to be spoken, right, I will go higher up the food chain and find somebody who can enforce those words and will actually come and do it. Because otherwise no one has respect for you. The civility rules are very important. They create the convivial atmosphere, right? They must be announced. I announce them even if I don't think anybody's going to need them. It's kind of gratifying to announce the civility rules and everybody goes, yeah, of course. We wouldn't dream of doing whatever horrible thing it is that would break the civility rules, right? Right. But they need to be announced, even in a group that doesn't look like they're going to have a problem, and then enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, did you hear the immediately? Consistently and fairly. Do not wait until things get really out of hand and go, you know those civility rules that we talked about? We're going to enforce them now. No, don't let them get to that stage. Enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly, and bring in the employer whenever you need to. Don't be afraid to do that, because they want to get the successful outcome, and they need to understand that without their assistance, there will be none. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, that is the next thing we say after we do the civility rules is that you, as leader, must be a model of the civility rules. How will you get people to follow something, to do something, that you personally don't do? You cannot. You must be a model of the civility rules. Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Because you need to set a good example. Now, what happens if you're having a bad day? And it's just kind of, somebody's gotten on your last nerve. This happens. We're human beings, for heaven's sake. We're not AI, artificial intelligence. We're human beings. What if you really, really lose it for civility for a moment there? And you act in a non-civility rule manner towards a participant or an employer or anybody, come to think of it. You suddenly breach the model of civility. What should you do? Hopefully not. People are saying you should quit. You should recuse yourself because you've had it, and you really can't fix that. The answer is, I suppose it depends how bad it was, whether you got kind of personal. I once saw that. That was truly kind of, wow, been drinking, have we? Yeah, it was off the wall. I, of course, did not do it. I occasionally get cross, and I try not to. The 900th time something has been tried or said or whatever, yeah, 901, sometimes you just have that tone to your voice, right? Right. And my threat is really I'm calling in the employer, right? Yeah, so that's not, tone of my voice is irrelevant. So, but I want to model the civility rules. What if you breach them? You could quit on the spot. Unfortunately, my guess is that would make the uncivil person's day because they are probably trying to oust you because they don't want the successful outcome to occur, and they'd like someone worse than you to try it, right? Because you're going to get there, darn it. You are experienced, you're intelligent, you've got this, right? Well, they don't want you to got this. They want you to recuse yourself, to leave, and so they see if they can bait you, right? Mm-hmm, I don't think so. What happens if you accidentally do? And it's not so egregious that you have to quit, because try not to. They're going to get somebody worse than you. It's going to be terrible, and then they won't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And besides, it's really bad for your reputation, right? You breach the civility rules, you apologize. On the spot. And you excuse yourself as a bad example of what we're not supposed to do. Apologize and use yourself as a... Everybody understands that. They understand that you had a bad day and it was one of those things, right? And it won't happen again. Yes. No, do not allow the thing to go uncivil. Do not allow things to become uncomfortable. Apologize. Call yourself out, so to speak, and apologize. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's extremely important to enforce and model civility in all directions. People are talking about levels of participant. Sometimes there are. In fact, I see that quite a bit. I see a lot of times not everybody in the group is a volunteer. In fact, some of them might be, they're conscripted. No. If you deal with large companies and like that, a certain level of employee is called in to these meetings, to these negotiations, because they need to implement the new rules that we're going to hash out, and they have interest in it, right? Right. this makes for a very diverse and a very uniform crowd at the same time. Because it is true that they've got corporate culture. They know each other. They've dealt with each other in the past. They understand the company, the employer, right? But they don't understand how to deal with each other. And sometimes there is more than one level, and people think they're in the better level, even if they're all equal. Does that make sense? Excuse me. And the answer is sometimes even the employer thinks that there's kind of a caste system where you've got more important and less important. The less important usually being the ones that have to implement whatever it is we're doing. So they're terribly important to be there. And I try very hard not to have that. If I do, I break up the group and I make across the levels committees, right? And teams, if that's possible. I say if, because some corporate cultures are so structured that you need to deal with each level individually. And they need to hash it out because they won't speak freely in front of each other. They sit there unable to participate because you can say, nothing leaves this room. But, and maybe they won't like report on it because we have the rule about blogging and stuff. But we don't work in a vacuum. And these people have to go out into the real world on different levels, right? And you'd be surprised the amount of arrogance that I see about I'm more important. Yes. So civility runs in all directions. What else do you have to have employer backing for? Because we're going to run out of time. The power to enforce. The power to enforce the civility rules. If you don't cooperate, if you don't work to the best of your ability, if you don't get it in on time and like that, there will be employment repercussions is the key to this. Not it's nice to be civil and respect everybody and like that. People don't care. They want to know what's going to happen if they disrupt things. And the answer is you won't be allowed to be part of this group anymore. And this group is important to be a part of because it has to do with the level of employment that you are presently at. Right? Right. We talked about fundraising because you have to have the backing of the employer for fundraising also. Remember that if you are asked to give a figure, what you think. I have a lot of experience, right? I have an idea about how much experts are and like that, how long it's going to take. Employers usually ask for an estimate of time and funding. I choose, if I'm asked and I'm the arbiter of it, I choose big. I choose long and expensive. That's how I get the reputation, right? Yeah. Because you don't have to spend every penny or every minute, but you should have some flexibility in case things get slowed down. Sometimes things happen while you're in process. Something outside your control happens. Circumstances change that either slows or speeds the process, and you could not know that such a crazy thing. So that's important to understand, to need to estimate kind of big as you can. And employer backing, how about flexibility in the definition? We have a definition of success. We try not to make it too specific. The reason being that it will change. Unless you've got something that is so fine-tuned that there is only one successful outcome. And you might have opposition. It doesn't mean you don't have opposition. But opposition is not interested. It's a successful outcome now, right? And if that's true, that's nice. But we need to really really think about that. And also we need to have flexibility in defining our success. Let's go on to employer saving face, right? You have to have empathy, because you have to have understanding that if things don't exactly go as planned, which we all understand is the flexibility portion, it's, well, this is not quite it. Let's switch it up a smidge, right? It is important to have the employer be able to back you, and also to understand the employer has a position and a power and a future also, and they don't want to back you and somehow lose their position. So it all has to make a circle, right?
Right.
Some of you are making reports to superiors. Get straight ahead of time what kind of report and how frequently, and whether or not the report is a team effort, as in you can have a committee send in a report, right? How we're doing, how we're progressing. My favorite kind of report is come and join us and let's all see how we're doing, right? Yeah, but you need to have some, well, yeah, you need to be kind of sure of yourself in order to invite the employer into the room. Yes, just as you have to justify the time and expense, Muhammad and others are mentioning that the employer has to justify the time and expense. Yeah, there has to be, they have to say, well, this is really important, and how will it affect, for example, our business, our bottom line? And if they can show that that would be a positive effect, well, wouldn't that be better, right? Yeah. Also, you always need to remember, and we call them a recipe for peace now. Yes, thank you. People are already talking about the invisible participants. We call them that a recipe for peace now because they are people, organizations, whatever, who are influencing the outcome. They're influencing what happens, but they're not necessarily in the room. In fact, they're not. That's why they're invisible. For one reason or another, they're taking an interest. Sometimes they even have a really good idea. Sometimes they go back into their area, having had this idea, and they're supposed to make a report now for something that's uncertain for the future. And people have to understand, the invisible participants need to understand that. Who are the invisible participants? They are people who have an interest but don't want to be named. They want to be anonymous. But they've got something we want to know, right? I like to invite them in, but that makes them not anonymous anymore, right? No longer invisible. If they really don't want to be named by name, but they want to tell us something important, come and tell it to me as leader. I am trustworthy, and you must be trustworthy. Your reputation will never survive actually telling the world who your invisible participants are. Yes, you have to have it. Respect flows in all directions. And it's respectful of the invisible participants not to divulge their identity. Right? Right. Yes, they make a big difference because they usually have history behind them. And they is very, they're of great value. They're real experts, and you need to have them. People are asking why they'd want to be invisible. The answer is usually because they have employment in the present day circumstances. They think things should change, so they're willing to help. But in case we don't make it, they don't want to lose their employment. Right? Right. Let's talk about respect for a minute. Respect flows in all directions amongst the participants, participants to leader, leader to participants, employer up and down. Always treat everyone with respect. First of all, it creates a convivial atmosphere. Then people come back they'll say, look, we're getting someplace. This is really cool. And then they get, and then there's kind of the bragging to the other people. I'm on Sue's team. And people go, how'd you get that? I'm on, well, a different one, right? Yeah, and people love that. They love to be on the team that's really the winner. But respect creates the convivial atmosphere. You wouldn't like to go to something where you weren't sure if you were going to be insulted, interrupted, called a bad name. My. That's not very convivial, right? Remember that respect is also a team effort, right? Your team has to have respect for each other. Your team has to work together. Your team has to be able to maybe appoint a leader to work with other teams, right? Although I like everybody to be there. Yes. No, not really. Well, so respect flows in all directions. I was thinking about this because I've got some examples here where the employer is kind of a bully and is not acting in a respectful manner. I call them out, and I explain that that is unacceptable behavior. Because sometimes they just have a nasty case of entitlement. And that's no way to negotiate. And, yeah, but I'm pretty firm in my position, though. That's a judgment call. But I think your job is to also educate the employer with empathy and respect and team effort, right? And the concept that the faster we get this done right, well, the faster we're done right, and we can go on, right? If someone has to do with employer expectations, yes. Remember that they need to be realistic. Now, that's a sentence. The expectations need to be realistic of the employer. Well, how do we determine, especially at the beginning, exactly what's realistic and what isn't? Good point, yeah. Lee and others are saying that you determine it because it's been done by other groups before. They found it to be realistic. We will too, right? Somebody has done this before under similar circumstances. Let's look at what they've done. Let's maybe call in that leader as an expert to tell us how that worked, how that was finished, right? Yeah. So let's look at other similar situations and find out what was done in order to think about our own expectations, right? Then we call upon our individual leadership, right? Yes. And all of you are leaders. I am participating, but you are leaders too. And we want to call in everybody and get assistance. I actually take a poll. They're my experts, right? I don't have experience in everything, but somebody has experience. And those leaders will help us to determine what the expectations should be. How are expectations created? People are talking about peer pressure. Other leaders, other employers, other participants, they make comments, right? They say that they did this really quickly and easily and stuff, right? Yeah, so you've got some peer pressure. I like to know specifics. Exactly how did you do this? Fabulous. Give me hints. Give me clues. Show me what you did. Show me your work. Show me your worksheets. The board sometimes is the peer pressure. It depends what kind of an organization it is and whether the board is somewhat hostile to administration. Sometimes that happens. A committee that's interested and formed, right? And also the media likes to know about how things are going in relationship to everybody else. There's some scrutiny, right? Yeah. We touched on employer empathy. We're going to do for and by the employer, right? Yes. And we need to have some understanding that it's not that easy to be in charge. It's not. And we need to understand the saving of face. We need to understand the power play. We need to understand the competition for scarce resources and time. And remember, time is an extremely scarce resource. And resources does not necessarily mean money. It's time and people, too. In fact, time and people are more important than money a lot of times, because a lot of times I deal with things that are not so separately funded. They are funded within the salaries. Does that make sense? You don't get paid extra to be in this group to participate, but it's important because it's part of your employment expectation. We have to find a solution to something, right? Yeah. So that you as leader need to understand that too. You need to understand that a lot of times your participants are not such volunteers. They're not there because of a real passion. They have to be given passion by your model of enthusiasm, your model of civility, and by the modeling of the process to get things done. If people see that they're reaching a solution, it's workable, they're getting things done, they're dealing with other people in a respectful manner, oh my God, they'll become enthusiastic. And they'll invent ways to help and bring them to the table and go, yeah, let's try this. This seems like a really good idea, right? Yeah. And so your employer expectation has to also deal with the circumstances created by outsiders, right? Because even if something's a privately funded, internal, it affects outsiders probably, outside circumstances, right? How about bringing in an expert? Mm-hmm. Experts don't necessarily get to be paid, but there should be funding, right? How about having a media spokesperson? Because remember that your employer, one of the relationships they have is with other opinions on the outside world. And if it comes to the notice of the media and the public, that will cause them to shift if the media does not go in the way that they expected, because they'll be sensitive to it. And this is not just for stuff that's kind of, ooh, really, you're going to do that? No, it's for everything, because the public, the media, creates public opinion, and public opinion is strong, is important to understand, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we get everybody together and get them to really work, and yes, thank you. People are going, oh, my God, you're actually doing a recipe. Yes, because I generally don't get to them. And I confess this, but I left time. One of the ways to bring everybody into the room, the employer, the participants, the invisible participants, maybe, but the interested parties, those who are going to be affected, is to really bring them into the room in a convivial manner. How about some food, right? The food is a tool. It is not because we are hungry. I mean, we might be hungry. It might be dinner time. But that's not really the purpose of the food. The purpose of the food is to get us talking to each other, to get us to understand that we're all in this together. We're all on the same side. We all need to participate. We all need to find a solution sooner rather than later. This is the purpose of the food. So we're going to have food, and we're going to need to take, first thing we're going to need to do since we've decided to have this potluck, it was going to need to take a survey. And we use potluck kind of as a, we give a recipe in like that, but it might be catered. I mean, it might not be everybody bringing something. I see that a lot. but you still need to take the survey and find out if anybody's allergic to anything, doesn't eat something, or has some sort of religious or personal prohibitions. We don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? And everybody's included. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised. A lot of people do. And then we want to ask everyone, including the caterer, to not just put a sign on stuff that says what it is, meatloaf, but give a list of ingredients so that I can run my eye down those ingredients and decide if that's something I can eat. We don't want people to get a nasty surprise, right? In fact, I'm very fussy, especially if there's a caterer, to have somebody double check what's in everything, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. A lot of folk, Lee and others, are talking about the fact that you also have to check for usage of chemicals. There's a thing called MSG that is added to restaurant food to make it taste better. And people are sensitive to it. They'll get sick. So this is important stuff to know. Mm-hmm. I think that you should have at least one safe recipe, right? Everybody can eat it. And in my area where this is being served, it would be something that people are familiar with. In my area, a curry would be an adventure recipe. Maybe not in yours. Maybe everybody eats curry, right? Because we're an international show, a lot of you from all kinds of places. But this one, we're going to do the safe recipe first because it's been around longer. And we're going to get to one, but it'll be fine. This one, it would be a safe recipe where I am. I think pretty much everywhere. It is actually a slow cooker recipe. I do those occasionally because a lot of you have one. And it's what we call a crock pot, right, in the United States. But some sort of slow cooker. It is easy because you throw everything in. It cooks. You pick up the whole device and you bring it. And then you set it on the fire or plug it in again. And it smells really nice in the room. And there it is. It's food. So it's kind of self-making. And I like it a lot. I got to admit this. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the chicken and vegetable slow cooker recipe. It's got some cheese, which you have to watch out for, but I think most people can eat these. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a cup of shredded cheddar cheese, a tablespoon of cornstarch, because we're going to do some thickening, 2 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken. It's easy for me to get boneless, skinless chicken breast because it comes like that you cut into chunks, like one-inch chunks. Mm-hmm. We serve this over rice. It's fabulous. Let's get 2 10-ounce packages of frozen vegetables. I like the mixed vegetables. I think they look pretty. You can decide what you like. Yeah, a lot of you are going for peas. I just like the mixed veg that comes like that. A nice big onion we're going to chop up, a nice sweet one. Let's have a cup of chicken broth. And I don't know, a cup of those of something crispy on the top, right? Something yummy that you sprinkle over the top of it. You could decide what you think of this, but I like to use crispy onions. Something that's yummy and goes over the top and adds some taste and some texture to it. You can also use nuts if nobody's allergic to nuts. Almonds are lovely for this. Crushed almonds. Mm-hmm. Even slivered almonds. They look lovely and they're very tasty. I like to use almonds with raisins, almonds and white raisins. The raisins get soft, the almonds get yummy. It's just take my word for it, it's delicious. And on the side, we're going to have a whole bunch of rice, right? Because we're going to put this over rice. And I like to serve things separately because then people take a spoonful of this, a spoonful of that, as much as they like. We're going to take the cheddar cheese and the cornstarch and we're going to toss them together. We're going to place the chicken, the vegetables, the onion, the broth, oh, all of it, the cornstarch cheddar mixture into the slow cooker. Mix it all around, right? Let's cook the whole darn thing, which is why I love slow cookers, because they just mix the whole darn thing. Cook it for, oh, the low setting, 4 hours. The high setting, maybe 3 hours. I always do the low setting. I always give it an extra half hour just to make sure that the chicken is cooked through. So we'll give it 4.5 hours on low setting, on low heat. We put in about half the cheddar when we did that. Let's put in the rest of the cheddar and mix it around. Just to give it a little extra cheese oomph. In fact, we could just get another half cup of cheddar. I like cheese. And it makes it delicious, and it makes everything kind of come together. It's now ready to eat. It's ready to serve. We've got this. The rice is on the side. We've got a slow cooker full of delicious, cheesy chicken and vegetables. Let's take our topping and either put it on the side or put it on. I like to put it on because it makes the topping warm, and if you're going to top it with raisins, which is a little eccentric, but I think it's delicious. I like those white raisins. They'll get soft because they'll get steamed through, and so will the slivered almonds. If you're not using that, you're using the onions or whatever. Whatever it is you like on top, put that on top. Put the lid on it for a few minutes more because it's all nice and hot and steamy and like that. And then everybody digs in. Fabulous. It takes, and you can even make, if you've got the facilities, which really, you only need electricity if you've got an electric crock pot. You can make it right in the room, and it smells fabulous. Everybody will be anxious to reach agreement so they can go eat that. So, that's the safe recipe. My friends, yes, I only made it to one recipe, but it was a big deal to make it to one. We're out of time. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.